This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, now offering Peaberry Especial, a blend of rare pea berries from Colombia, New Guinea, and Tanzania. For a limited time at Pete's retail stores or on the web at Pete's.com.
Good morning. Here comes the KABU News for Monday, February 6th. I'm Blaine Palmer.
And I'm Chris Andre. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is at this moment testifying before the Senate.
Feminist Betty Friedan has died.
The Lebanese Interior Minister has resigned after rioters destroyed the Danish embassy.
And Interpol is hunting 23 prisoners who escaped from a prison in Yemen. 13 of them were convicted members of Al-Qaeda.
Portland area weather today: morning fog, then mostly sunny. Highs in the 50s to lower 60s. Tonight, clear except for valley fog. Temperatures in the 30s and lower 40s.
Even as their tuition and fees have climbed 50% in the last 5 years, Oregon's university students are more likely than ever to be taught by part-time instructors instead of full-time professors. Lower-paid instructors aren't held to the same stringent hiring standards as professors. They're less likely to engage in research that could enhance their teaching, and they aren't subject to performance reviews of the kind professors face. Most of these instructors work part-time and sometimes don't have access to basic resources like private place to meet with students. Part-timers aren't paid to do the work that professors have always done outside the classroom, like advising and mentoring students, overseeing honors theses, and developing new courses. The result is students can't count on quality and continuity, and Oregon risks losing its capacity to produce graduates that are prepared to compete at the highest levels in the economy and in society. As student enrollment grows, state funding per student hasn't kept pace, and higher tuition has not filled the gap, so campuses have turned to the cheaper-to-hire instructors. Across the state's seven campuses, 84% of teaching positions that were added from 1999 to 2004 were part-time. Many instructors are concentrated at the freshman and sophomore levels in core liberal arts disciplines such as writing, mathematics, foreign languages, and the sciences. At Oregon State, professors carry out 41% of undergraduate teaching, compared with 68% a decade ago. According to a university system analysis, the University of Oregon and Portland State have professors accounting for about half of undergraduate instruction. Most of the state's undergraduate attend those three schools. The trend, reflected in public universities nationally, raises many red flags. This from the Oregonian.
The victim of a Saturday evening shooting in northeast Portland has died. Portland police detectives will now be investigating the death as a homicide. Robert Wardell Seeger was found shot around 5:30 Saturday at the southwest corner of the intersection of Northeast Failing Street and Garfield Avenue. He was taken to Legacy Emanuel Hospital and Health Center, where he died at 10:20 p.m. Catherine Kent, a Portland Police Bureau spokeswoman, said Seeger had no criminal history and no gang affiliations. Seeger lived in southeast Portland, and family members told detectives that he might have been visiting friends in the northeast neighborhood. Kent said Seeger appeared to have been walking alone on the sidewalk when he was shot. A witness told investigators of seeing a group of men running to a silver van and driving away, but it was unclear whether the group was involved in the shooting. Kent declined to describe Seeger's wounds or any possible motives for the attack. Seeger's killing would be Portland's fourth homicide this year, according to the Oregonian.
A two-week highway safety campaign will stretch across Oregon, Washington State, and British Columbia in a crackdown on dangerous and impaired drivers. The Oregon State Police will be part of the Three Flags campaign. It's scheduled to begin today and run through February 19th. Officials say the campaign is the first of three highway safety enforcement campaigns to promote proper use of safety restraints, deter speeding and dangerous drivers, and remove impaired drivers from the highways. Each state police office has been directed to coordinate saturation patrols with local police agencies in known problem areas. Nearly 100 county and city police agencies in Oregon may participate during the two-week campaign.
The Oregon doctor, known in Australia as Dr. Death, could be facing manslaughter charges. Dr. Jayant Patel of Portland could also face 200 counts of grievous bodily harm in the Australian state of Queensland. Australian police have recommended that 4 charges of manslaughter be filed against Patel, who worked at Kaiser Permanente Northwest in Portland since the 1990s. But Kaiser restricted his practice in 1998 after an investigation into a string of botched surgeries and lawsuits. That was followed by a separate investigation by the state of Oregon, which disciplined Patel in the year 2000. Patel resigned from Kaiser in 2001, but was hired by the Bundaberg Base Hospital in a remote area of Australia in 2003 without informing Australian authorities of the action taken against him in Oregon. Patel's Portland-based lawyer, Stephen Howes, has said he will fight any effort to extradite his client to Australia, claiming that media coverage has jeopardized his chances of getting a fair trial.
Cities in central Oregon won't lend their support to a bill that would give the government power to log forests in the wake of a forest fire. Oregon Representative Greg Walden is sponsoring the bill set to be heard in Congress this month. KBOO's Kirk Vanderveer reports.
The bill would give the government power to conduct salvage logging after a major fire, like the Biscuit Fire. Oregon Representative Greg Walden, sponsor of the bill, asked the Central Oregon Cities Organization to endorse the legislation as Congress gets set for hearings this month. But the organization voted unanimously against that endorsement. Bend City Councilor John Hummel says there's no reason to rush.
The science is still analyzing the impacts of post-fire logging. If you're wrong on those impacts, if you move forward now without understanding the impact, you could significantly increase the fire risk. So why not wait and make sure you get it right?
Hummel says it's too early to say whether the bill is good or bad.
At this point, it's not clear that the bill will help or hurt. Let's make sure the science can tell us that what's proposed in the bill will actually be good for the environment and good for safety before we move forward with it.
Walden says his proposal will help control future fires, but Hummel points to the Oregon State University study showing that post-fire logging can actually increase fire risk and set back natural regeneration. Content was provided by the Oregon News Service. I'm Kirk Vanderveer, KBOO News.
One of the leading lights of America's post-war feminist movement, Betty Friedan, has died of congestive heart failure. She was 85. Friedan was best known for her book, The Feminine Mystique, which said women were not necessarily fulfilled by their roles as housewives and mothers. In 1966, she went on to found America's National Organization for Women, or NOW, which campaigned for full equality, and she became its first president. In her best-selling book, Friedan argued that the feminine mystique was a phony bill of goods society sold to women, leaving them unfulfilled. As a founder and first president of NOW, Friedan campaigned for abortion, equal pay, and promotion and maternity leave, positions that seemed extreme at that time. However, she had wanted her movement to remain in the mainstream and had opposed equating feminism with lesbianism. This from the BBC.
President Bush signed an extension on Friday of an anti-terrorism law enacted after the September 11th attacks that critics say infringes on civil liberties. The White House said Bush signed the legislation to extend until March 10th the provisions of the USA Patriot Act, which is set to expire on Friday. Bush was at his Crawford, Texas ranch after stops earlier in Dallas and New Mexico to press for his State of the Union agenda. He has sought a permanent renewal of the Patriot Act, saying it provides necessary tools for fighting terrorism. But some lawmakers want additional time to resolve concerns about protecting civil liberties before making most of the provisions permanent. Bush acted one day after the Senate approved the bill passed earlier by the House of Representatives. The bill provided a brief extension of the expiring provisions. Critics have expressed concern over what they say is the government's ability to obtain an individual's private records in a terrorism investigation when it had not been determined that the person had ties to terrorism. This according to Reuters.
Today, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is testifying before a Senate committee as the chief legal defender of a domestic eavesdropping operation. The domestic spying has touched off a stormy debate over its legality. As White House counsel, Gonzalez provided legal support for the program of surveillance without warrants. Today is scheduled to be the sole witness before a panel led by Republican Senator Arlen Specter. Specter has made clear his skepticism about the administration's legal rationale. Gonzalez could find his own credibility at issue in the hearing as an important figure in developing the legal justification for the spy program when he was White House counsel. Some legal experts see Gonzalez as little more than a surrogate for President Bush, whom he has served in a variety of capacities since 1997, when Bush was governor of Texas. Gonzalez's credibility is especially suspect among Democrats.
Alleged 9/11 conspirator Zacharias Moussaoui returns this week to the courtroom, where a jury will determine whether he should be executed for his crimes. In April, Moussaoui, who was the only person charged in the United States in connection with the September 11th attacks, pleaded guilty to all six counts against him. A jury will now determine whether he's sentenced to death or life in prison. In the first step of a lengthy process to choose a jury, 500 prospective jurors will appear at the U.S. District Court in Alexandria, Virginia today to fill out detailed questionnaires. U.S. District Judge Leonie Brinkema has set aside 1 month to pick a jury of 12 people plus six alternates. Final jury selection and opening statements are scheduled for March 6th. Brinkema will be trying to seat an impartial jury for the trial being held just a few miles from the Pentagon. Brinkema has also ruled that due to the intense media scrutiny and public interest in the case, jurors will remain anonymous. She has forbidden photographs or courtroom sketches that show the facial features or hair of jurors. The trial to determine Moussaoui's sentence will consist of two stages. The first phase will be to determine whether Moussaoui intentionally lied to the FBI in interviews prior to September 11th about his knowledge of the plan to hijack planes. If the jury determines he did lie, preventing the government from possibly stopping the attacks, then another phase of the trial will be held. And the second stage will see whether Moussaoui should be given the death sentence or life in prison. If the jury finds that he did not lie, he faces a sentence of life in prison. Moussaoui has denied being a part of the September 11th plot. When he pleaded guilty, he said that Osama bin Laden had picked him to fly a plane into the White House as part of a wider conspiracy. The trial's been delayed repeatedly for appeals over Moussaoui's access to al-Qaeda detainees, who he says can bolster his case. Moussaoui's lawyers say it will be difficult for the government to make its case. The government has been repeatedly criticized for failing to pick up on intelligence clues that might have helped prevent the hijackings. This, according to Reuters.
President Bush's 2007 budget proposes spending more than $2.7 trillion. Big increases will go principally to defense and homeland security and a smattering of other favored programs such as scientific research, education, and energy. At the same time, Bush's blueprint, being submitted to Congress today, proposes shrinking or eliminating 141 programs while achieving $36 billion in Medicare savings over the next 5 years. The plan for the budget year lays out a path to achieving two of the president's chief domestic goals, making permanent his first-term tax cuts, which are set to expire after 2010, and cutting the deficit in half by 2009, the year Bush will leave office. The budget's arrival on Capitol Hill will set off months of intense debate, made even more contentious by congressional elections in November, in which Democrats want to wrest congressional control from Republicans. While Congress is expected to reshape Bush's proposals significantly, Republicans voiced support for the blueprint's objectives. The budget's proposal's release comes only weeks before the national debt will hit the current limit of $8.18 trillion, requiring Congress to vote for an increase to keep the government operating.
Illegal immigration has surfaced as an early and potent issue in the Republican primary for Oregon governor. According to the Oregonian, the three major candidates are all talking tough on how to combat what they say is an unfair strain on expensive state services. Now, state officials say they require evidence of citizenship for most services, including food stamps, most health care services, and temporary cash assistance to needy families. Candidate Ron Saxton says he'll support a zero-tolerance policy for illegal immigration Saxton also began airing a radio ad last week lamenting that illegal aliens cost Oregon taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars every year. When State Senator Jason Atkinson declared his candidacy late last month, he listed control of illegal immigrants as one of his top issues. He says he wants to prevent them from getting driver's licenses and voter registration cards. Not to be outdone, frontrunner Kevin Mannix helped craft a resolution calling on Oregon to bar illegal residents from getting tax-paid benefits. The resolution, approved by the State Republican Central Committee last week, also calls for 1 year of legal Oregon residency for anyone to qualify for tax-paid assistance.
The Pentagon is readying for what it calls a long war, according to the Washington Post. The Pentagon has laid out a new 20-year defense strategy that envisions U.S. troops deployed, often clandestinely, in dozens of countries at once to fight terrorism and other non-traditional threats. Major initiatives include a 15% boost in the number of elite U.S. troops known as Special Operations Forces, a near doubling of the capacity of unmanned aerial drones to gather intelligence, a $1.5 billion investment to counter a biological attack, and the creation of special teams to find, track, and defuse nuclear bombs and other catastrophic weapons. China is singled out as having the greatest potential to compete militarily with the United States, and the strategy in response calls for accelerating the fielding of a new Air Force long-range strike force, as well as for building undersea warfare capabilities. The latest top-level reassessment of strategy, or quadrennial defense review, is the first to fully take stock of the starkly expanded missions of the U.S. military.
A new counterterrorism strategy devised by the Pentagon will measure and review military operations to determine whether or not more terrorists are being stopped or created. The New York Times obtained an unclassified version of the plan that, for the first time, orders the military to focus on 9 areas identified as necessary for any terrorist network to operate. Since September 11, 2001, more than 30 new Qaeda-affiliated terrorist organizations have emerged. The strategy document is dated February 1st and is signed by General Peter Pace, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and endorsed by Defense Secretary Donald A. Rumsfeld. The order orders the Defense Department to undertake a broad campaign to find and attack or neutralize terrorist leaders, their havens, financial networks, methods of communication, and ability to move around the globe. It also orders the military to focus on terrorist information gathering systems, personnel, and ideology. The document orders the military to defeat terrorists, specifying that doing so requires continuous military operations to develop the situation and generate the intelligence that allows us to attack global terrorist organizations.
Los Angeles County Detention Centers remained in a lockdown yesterday as sheriffs and investigators sought to determine what led to a race-related riot at a maximum security jail that left one inmate dead and more than 100 injured. Investigators were interviewing hundreds of inmates and witnesses to the fighting that erupted Saturday afternoon at the North County Correctional Facility. Sheriff's officers identified the slain inmate as Wayne Robert Tisner. Tisner, who is black, was jailed after being arrested January 3rd for failing to register as a sex offender. Black and Hispanic inmates at the facility remained segregated yesterday. Authorities normally can't segregate prisoners based on race or ethnicity because that's illegal. But legal advisors said it can be done in emergency situations. The North County Correctional Facility is a maximum security complex comprised of 5 jails within one facility on a 34-acre site, and it houses about 4,000 inmates.
The U.S. Secret Service says it's investigating a Rhode Island student who wrote a rambling essay advocating violence against President Bush and major U.S. corporations. A homework assignment asked 7th grade students at John F. Deering Middle School in West Warwick, Rhode Island, to describe their perfect day. The boy under investigation wrote it would involve unspecified violence against Bush, Coca-Cola and Walmart stores executives, and TV talk show host Oprah Winfrey. According to Reuters, the boy turned in the single-page assignment, and his teacher alerted school officials. The essay has not been released, and the student has not been identified. While it did not include any specific plan for attack, the principal said, anyone that writes what's on his mind, where he wants to do away with or kill people, it's something you got to pay attention to. Thomas Powers, Secret Service resident agent in charge in Providence, said, threatening the president is a felony. The student faces no charges from local police. The department has handed over the case to the Secret Service and is no longer involved. The American Civil Liberties Union in Rhode Island criticized law enforcement's involvement in the case.
A New York federal judge says the EPA made deliberate and misleading statements about air quality in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. FSRN's Rebecca Miles has more.
A class action lawsuit filed by New Yorkers against the Environmental Protection Agency and its former leadership can now proceed to court. Judge Deborah Batt said during her pre-trial opinion that statements made by former EPA head Christy Todd Whitman regarding the air quality in the vicinity of Ground Zero were deliberate and misleading, and that apparently false reassurances that the air was safe shocks the conscience. Internal documents later revealed that the EPA's own air quality tests indicated there was cause for concern. It's been estimated that about 2,000 tons of asbestos and over 400,000 tons of toxin-laden concrete were released in a massive dust cloud when the buildings came crashing down. Yesterday's ruling established that the accusations made in the class action suit are well documented and troubling enough to meet a legal standard to go forward, and to name Whitman as an individual defendant. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting from New York.
Lebanese Interior Minister Hassan Sabah resigned yesterday after demonstrators set fire to Beirut's Danish embassy. According to the BBC, on Saturday, mobs in Syria torched the Danish and Norwegian embassies in Damascus in a row over cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad. The cartoons first appeared in a Danish newspaper in September and caused outrage among Muslims who consider any images of Muhammad offensive. Protests started out peacefully but turned violent after Islamic extremists tried to break through security barriers protecting the building.
The U.S. military is investigating the death of an Iraqi detainee at Abu Ghraib prison in Baghdad. The prisoner who had been in custody since September died last month of complications from an apparent stroke. His brother says the man never suffered from any illness. No autopsy results are available yet. A military spokesman says a criminal investigation has been launched, as is the case with all detainee deaths. There are more than 12,000 detainees at Abu Ghraib and U.S. military camps in Iraq. Many are believed to be Sunni Arabs suspected of supporting Sunni-led insurgent groups.
The Palestinian Authority general said he had uncovered the theft or misuse of $700 million of public funds and suspects much more has gone missing. Ahmed al-Megami said billions of dollars may have been misappropriated and that his office has ordered 25 arrests to date. Megami said that in December, the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who is not tainted by corruption accusations, asked him to delay a public announcement about the investigation until after the election because he feared it would be seen as a ploy to win votes.
Saddam Hussein's lawyers said yesterday that an Iraqi court had denied them access to their client and said the decision was part of an illegal plan to convict the former leader at any cost, this according to Reuters. It's the first time that such a request has been rejected since the former leader was allowed access to lawyers over a year ago. Dulemi said Chief Lawyer Khalil Dulemi said, we're notified by the Americans today that neither I nor the rest of the defense counsel can meet the president or our other clients. He added, they are moving to a speedy conviction. They have already passed the sentence even before the trial has ended. Saddam and seven co-defendants face hanging if found guilty of crimes against humanity. The defense counsel boycotted court sessions last Wednesday and Thursday on the grounds that newly selected Chief Judge Rauf Abdelrahman, whom they accuse of bias, should resign. Before the latest showdown, Dulemi and his team spent hours with Saddam after the trial began, but said the boycott would continue until the demands were met.
Iran yesterday ended snap UN checks of its nuclear sites and said it was resuming uranium enrichment a day after being reported to the Security Council over suspicions it's building nuclear weapons. Reuters reports that diplomats warned the response could heighten the dispute over the nuclear ambitions of the world's fourth biggest oil exporter. Tehran insists it needs nuclear technology only to generate electricity. Iran's main measure was the suspension of uranium enrichment. If enriched to a low level, uranium can be used in power stations. If enriched further to weapons grade, it can be used in nuclear warheads. Iran signed the additional protocol to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty in 2003, thereby allowing short-notice inspection of its atomic sites. The International Atomic Energy Agency voted on Saturday to report Iran to the Security Council, but the top UN body will take no action until an IAEA report is delivered in March.
Militants attacked a U.S. military patrol in Afghanistan today and killed one American. It happened near a central Afghan city where protests erupted over the publication of cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad. But a U.S. spokesman doesn't believe the two events are connected. Two Afghans died and several were wounded during the cartoon protests. Separately, the military says a suspected insurgent has been killed and two police officers wounded. That clash also involved U.S. troops and occurred near a crossing point at the Pakistan border.
The FBI is closely monitoring the hunt for nearly two dozen men who escaped from a jail in Yemen last week. Interpol has issued a global security alert. It says at least 13 of the 23 escapees are convicted al-Qaeda fighters. One has been sentenced to death for plotting the October 2000 attack on the USS Cole that killed 17 American sailors. Officials set up checkpoints around Yemen's capital, where the prison was located, to try to catch the escapees before they can flee to the protection of mountain tribes. Interpol says the escape and the unknown whereabouts of al-Qaeda terrorists constitutes a clear and present danger to all countries. This has been the Cable Morning News for Monday, February 6th. Chris Andre edited the news. KBOO volunteers edited the tape stories. Jim Thompson's on the board right now. KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. And I'm Blaine Palmer.
And I'm Chris Andre. Portland area weather today. Morning fog, then mostly sunny, highs in the 50s to lower 60s. Tonight clear, except for valley fog, temperatures in the 30s and lower 40s.
Thanks for listening this morning. We clear the air at 90.7 FM Portland, 100.7 FM Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Be sure to join us this evening at 5 p.m. for the KBOO Evening News.
Wondering what to do with all that news on your mind? Volunteer in the KBOO Morning Newsroom. Call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, to find out how you can get involved. Visit our website at www.kboo.fm. Coming up on the KBOO News this morning,
at 7:30, Cecil and Celeste host More Talk Radio. Their guest is Alan Sager. He's co-director of the health reform program at Boston University's School of Public Health. The topic is the Medicare mess.
And at 9 on the Old Mole Variety Hour, we'll have an interview with Cynthia Griggs Fleming about the life of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Activist Ruby Doris Smith Robinson. Also, hear an interview with Allison Weir, director of if Americans knew about the U.S. media bias in reporting on Israel and Palestine. And a review of the classic Vietnam War film, Hearts and Minds.
At 10 o'clock on Health Watch, the guest is Dr. Mark Weissbluth, a pediatrician and sleep researcher. He'll talk about his book, Healthy Sleep Habits, Healthy Child.
At 10:30 on the Monday on the Environment with Scott Forrester, the issues of mining near Mount St. Helens, Portland's wholesale water contracts, and the future of public electric power.
And don't miss Democracy Now! At 11 o'clock with Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening this morning.